What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be reviewing a bunch of comics for you in the middle of the comics apocalypse. As I think we should mention this probably up front, that comics are going on a little bit of a pause, or at least most comics are going on a pause starting April 1st. Don't worry, we are going to keep doing the Stack podcast no matter what, but this is going to be maybe the last week for a little while that new comics are coming out in droves, and we got a big old stack of reviews for you, kicking it off with Valiant Comics Exo Manowar number one.
Well, and maybe we should say before we get into it, if you guys have anything you want us to cover in a future non-new comics based stack next episode, hit us up on Twitter or in the comments, and we will add a series, an arc, a trade, anything from all of comics history and talk about it.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've seen Justin's character Welcome stuff, but like he will act out or recap any of your favorite runs.
Yeah, yeah, I'm getting to it.
Yeah, there you go. This is actually Pete and I are going to take the next couple of weeks off, and Justin's just going to do some characters.
Yep. Superman number 75.
So again, Exo Manowar number one from Valiant, written by Dennis Hopeless Hallam and art by Emilio Lazo. This is, of course, as you can guess from the title, rebooting Exo Manowar, the Visigoth in the armor for a new title. In this one, he is back on Earth. He's hanging out in a neighborhood with people playing basketball, trying to fit in. Classic Crocodile Dundee situation.
It's a classic croc. That's what they shorthand they use in all of entertainment, is a classic croc.
And then things go predictably long. Pete, what do you want to say here?
Well, I like how it starts, because it's like, you know, he talks about that voice in his head and how much it means to him, you know, and I think that's nice. You know, sometimes you got to address those weird voices in your head and make sure that they are appreciated and loved, you know. And then it does feel a little bit weird to see Exo Manowar like interacting with people, but I got past it pretty quick because it like still kept who the character was, which I appreciated.
I like Exo Manowar a lot. I've always liked the character. It's such a fun, weird mashup of person from the past with high-tech armor fighting high-tech space things in the future, in the present/future. It's really fun. I like the fish out of water situation here. I want to know like what the actual relationships are that are going to be important in this comic. Feels like it's him and his onboard computer, him and this woman that he just met, and him and space in general. The ultimate relationship.
Really loved when he threw that bug. The car was VW bug was great.
Oh, VW bug. Are you falling asleep? What's going on right now, Pete?
Yeah,
very sleepy.
My brain
sleepy, Pete. I know. Now that we're all working from home, who has time to sleep? The one of us without children is like, God, I am exhausted.
I've been playing Animal Crossing all day. It's tough life. I like this as well. I think this feels very sitcom-y to me in the right way, where it is just Exo Manowar being like, how do I play this basketball? But Dennis Hallam plays it very well and writes it very well.
Yeah.
There's good action stuff in here as well. And I like the idea that he's not a very good hero, which they double down on a lot here, that he keeps just taking action, but sometimes it's completely the wrong action.
Yes.
Always so take good. Action.
Yeah. Next one to talk about from Marvel Comics, Road to Empire. I want to clarify this with a Y, not an I. The Kree-Skrull War number one from Marvel, written by Robbie Thompson, art by Matt DeLulis, Javier Rodriguez, and Alvaro Lopez. This is picking up, interestingly enough, on the Meet the Skrulls comic book that came out a while ago, about a bunch of Skrulls who are undercover in the Marvel Universe, and it has them on the run recounting stories of the Kree and the Skrull, leading in to this big Empire storyline that's going to kick off pretty soon. I got to be honest, I've been very dubious about the Empire storyline for a variety of reasons, but I still liked this book. I thought the art was good, and I thought the stories were interesting.
Is that because you didn't like the TV show?
Empire? No, Empire? I watched the crap out of that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm also very happy that this wasn't like Road to Empire Zero issue. It was the number one issue, which I really appreciated. I think this really does a great job of getting things set up for this.
A lot of comic book reviewers talk about the content of the issue, but on our show, we cover the numbering, the most numbering. Important part.
Yeah. I like the fact that it was a number one issue because number one is number one in my book.
Sometimes the zero issue feels like you shouldn't buy it. It doesn't count as an issue. It just feels like a frivolous bullshit thing. So I'm glad that they're like, no, this is important. It's a number one issue. It's not a zero issue, even though it's kind of before an event. So I'm happy that they're kind of standing behind their content instead of doing a half-assed thing.
Oh, my top 10 favorite numbers? I'd say 7, 4, 6, 9, 8, 1, 2, 3, and then 0 is number 1.
Oh, wow.
Peter, so reverse order.
Question for you. I mean, this isn't about the numbers, but since it's called Road to Empire, were you disappointed that Bing Crosby and Bob Hope never showed up in it?
Yeah, Soup's disappointed.
Soups.
Well, yeah. I think we've said enough about this issue.
I like this comic a lot. I thought Meet the Skrulls was a great series, and I was really excited to see these characters pop up again. Really well written. The art was great in this. Really got into some weird parts of the Marvel Universe with all this Kree Skrull stuff, with the different battles, the plant people, all that stuff was happening.
Yeah. I also liked how for like different parts they had different art styles, and I thought it really did well with the storytelling. I was really impressed, and I like the plant people. I'm excited to see what happens.
I also think it's interesting that it's the Kree-Skrull War in the same way it was like the French and Indian War, whereas the French and Indians versus the British is going to be the Kree and the Skrull versus Earth. That's history.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's true. Wow, I really hadn't thought about that before. Thank you for bringing
it up. You hadn't thought about it, but you gotta learn the history, Alex, or you're destined to repeat
Native American, Dick.
Yeah. So you're saying if I don't learn about history, I'm destined to repeat it?
You're destined to repeat LePage it, which is the most dangerous thing to do twice.
Yeah.
Yeah. History and repeat, we're in a boat together. And anyway, I'll tell you later. Let's move on to Lazarus Risen number 4 from Image Comics. This is written by Greg Rucka and art and cover by Michael Lark. Justin, you like this book quite a bit, right?
Yeah, Justin, this is your cup of tea, right?
I love this comic. I've been reading this comic from issue number 1, and I imagine if you're reading this, you know that like there was a whole series before this, and then they changed up the format, moved the book to quarterly and made it sort of a larger, a nicer format, more pages, interesting packaging, everything. And it's great. The premise is that nice package. It's set in a slightly futuristic world where corporations have taken over. There are no more countries. It's just corporate sort of space. Their members of the family are the most powerful people, then serfs, and then everyone else is waste. And each family has a warrior that is like genetically and biotech engineered to fight for their family. And we're following one family and one of those Lazarus that are her story, and it's so good. It's so well thought out. In the back matter, Greg Rucka gets into a lot of new stories that are actually putting us on the road to a lot of things that he used as source material here. So just so good.
Pete, not to interrupt you, but Pete has a question.
Yeah, Justin.
I will take questions at the end. Pete, I'm at the end. What's your question?
Okay, great. Thank you for acknowledging that. So in this book, we see somebody kind of make a wish to their god, right? And then later it seems like they're acting out the wish, but their god has got like a haircut. Is it still the same god or is it a different god even though the haircut's different?
Yes. So the main character of the book is named Forever, and this book takes place over the course of many, many years. So it's actually jumping throughout the timeline of the book. Forever is has essentially become self-aware. She is this unstoppable assassin. She has realized exactly what's going on with her. A little complicated to get into exactly what is going on with her. But over time, they have given her drugs that have allowed her to regain her own mind, gain feeling, etc. And as part of that, she got a little bit of a haircut. So she's not actually a god. She is just a unstoppable soldier.
Yeah, but the army people call her a god.
Right. The same way that army people are like very cultish about things.
Oh, Alex, easy with that. Whoa.
Alex, great answer, but that was my fucking question. So I can't believe
thank you.
Sorry, do you want to take it?
That was a great answer. Pete, when someone you know gets a haircut, are you like, hey, what the fuck happened to you?
Well, it's hard because the artist draws females a little too similar for me to, it's a little bit tough, so I just wanted to make sure.
Here we go. Here we go with the misogyny.
You can't tell women apart.
Oh, well, don't you fucking.
Actually, I guess that's not misogyny.
Yeah. Right,
well, whatever.
It's really just bad eyesight.
It's just bad eyesight.
Yeah, I got to get my glasses checked out, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, great book. Pick it up. Next one from DC Comics, The Last God, number 6, created and written by Philip Kennedy Johnson and art by Ricardo Frederici. This takes place in a fantasy world that's being beset by something called the Flowering Dead. They are unstoppable monsters that are destroying the world. A group of adventurers have headed off to stop them. Meanwhile, we are finding out what happened 30 years earlier, the first time they were supposed to stop them, but didn't exactly do it. Man, I know I say this every single issue, but the designs in this book are so cool and so good. And the fantasy world building is amazing. Just incredible.
It's so well thought out. I mean, we had him on the show to talk about this, and his enthusiasm for this book and the time he's put in is just so obvious and palpable when you read it. And it's just great. I love the format. I love the characters. It's really well done.
Pete?
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of, I think it's great. I think it's amazing. It's
Pete's
just,
like, I could do better.
No. I just, I'm frustrated because of all the DC books that we got to talk about, like you picked what seemed like the most random DC books that came out this week. And like, it's just insane to me that we didn't talk about Wonder Woman. We didn't talk about all the main stuff, Flash, all that stuff. You picked Last Gods, Heads in a Duffel Bag, and some other random shit. And I'm going, what the fuck are we doing here?
Yeah, that's...
So it was hard to get past that chip to enjoy the books.
I don't want to pull back the curtain too much, but you already like took the curtain, threw it into a wood chipper, and then dumped it in an alley behind the bakery shop or whatever. We text constantly and email constantly, and I'm like, hey, here's some titles. At no point did you bring up that you wanted to talk about anything else until we were taping this podcast. Say it anytime earlier. Anytime. This is the point when it's too late.
But Pete, also, like, when you get a birthday present, are you like, this is great, but like, fuck, there are so many other presents out there that, like, did you even think of those presents? Like, how come we're not opening a gift
so many
to those
better
presents
to get to this present? Yeah.
Did you like this?
Yeah, I mean, the art's amazing. It's a great kind of storytelling. But
so you did like it?
Yeah, I liked it. I very much liked it. But I also just wanted to talk about my frustration a little bit.
And oh, great.
Pete,
thank
if you,
you
can't be with the one you love, you have to love the one you're with. And that applies to this right now.
Pete, all right, before we move on to the next comic book, Pete, when we're doing the live show, could you log out a little bit earlier? We're doing an Airing of Grievances, right?
Oh, great. Yeah. my bad, man. I'm,
Guys, let's not open this door. I know we've been quarantined for a while, but this is dangerous territory.
All right, from Boom Studios, Watch in Future number 7, written by Kieran Gillen, illustrated by Dan Mora. Pete, were there any other Boom Studios books you wanted us to talk about instead?
I want to talk about this book all the fucking time, every issue. This book is so creative, so fucking funny, so great. The art's unbelievable, unbelievable storytelling. I fucking love every single issue of this book. And the grandma is just the most badass person. Unbelievable. I love the way she talks about her son. Just fucking old school, tough love. It's just great.
This book is always making just the right moves. Yeah, we can explain what it is. It's probably a good idea. It's King Arthur has been resurrected. Yeah, the king is undead, as the promo line goes, and he's not nice. He's not a hero. It's so smartly written by Kieran Gillen, where King Arthur, whose whole thing was like, I have to protect England from like literally anybody. So of course, everyone is his enemy. So he's out to kill. We're bringing in a bunch of other Arthurian people. Galahad, our hero, is a descendant of the Arthurian legends as well. The grandmother is his grandmother, and a woman he was on a date with has been pulled into the action as well. This book just hits all the right notes. It's so great. And this is so tailor-made to be a TV show. The reveal at the end of the book.
What a great
so
reveal.
Smart. Well, it's so nerdy in the right way, too, where it hits those things where you're like, oh, yeah, I remember that from literature.
Yeah, it's like action hero nerdy.
Exactly. It's great. Even if you've never picked it up before, this is the start of a new arc. You can jump right in here. There's new action coming, new villains. Super, super fun. Definitely highly recommend this.
It's like Fast and the Furious. Art is amazing. It's like Fast and the Furious meets Arthurian legend.
Yeah. Well, that's Fast and the Furious.
Say like Seven, too fast or too
brief. Yeah, they form their own round table, but it's more of a rectangular table in the backyard where they have barbecues.
And they talk about family. And during Coronas. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Don't bring that up, Pete. Hellions number one for Marvel Comics, written by Zeb Wells and art by Steven Segovia. This is a crazy team-up book.
Yes.
Basically, this is a bunch of, I don't even know what to call them, X-Men characters. Like, it's kind of villains, kind of Z-list characters, kind of...
Misfits.
Yeah, misfits. That's a good way of putting it. You have Daddy and Orphan Maker, which are some of my favorite weird villains from X-Men.
Weird. Yeah.
You have one of the Hellions, Empath, who has always been a very rapey dick, honestly. You have Havoc, who has some stuff going on with him. Psylocke is kind of their handler, along with Mr. Sinister. And they're putting a team together, and the purpose seems to be like, let's send them into places where they're probably going to die essentially what it is.
In a world where we have like Krakoa, they have your team, the Marauders, that they go out and like slightly break the law. Then there's like, well, and then we could send an X-Force and they like fully break the law and they're allowed to like kill people, which no one else is allowed to. And then you have this team where it's like, they go if you're like, fuck, blow it up. It's like, let it all go. This is like the panic. I'm trying to think of what the action movie analog to this is, because it's definitely out there. It's almost like The Replacements, the football movie or something like that.
Yeah, or it's Suicide Squad. It's Suicide Squad, but for the X-Men, kind of. Particularly because their whole thing is like, we're not going to kill mutants. We're not going to kill humans or anything like that. So what do we do with these characters who are so far gone, we can't rehabilitate them. We're not going to mind wipe them or anything. What do we do instead? And ultimately, the reveal is another like deep continuity X-Men villain that's showing up at the end. It's going to be totally messed up going forward. And I just think it's going to be a lot of fun. And Zeb Wells is the perfect writer to be working on this because he's written such good bonkers stuff like this before.
And it's also just nice to see Scott Summers in a panic being like, oh yeah, your perfect island maybe isn't so perfect because it's a shit show of people running this thing and you're making awful decisions.
Sorry, should we move on from the place where you agreed with Cyclops, or do you want to stay on that for a moment, Pete?
I did not say I agreed with Cyclops. I said it showcased what a douche he is.
Agree with his choices,
right?
No, I agree with the fact that this council is making horrible decisions and this whole thing is completely fucked up.
That's what Cyclops is saying, so you agree with him.
Oh, my God. Cyclops.
I guess you could say Cyclops was right.
Oh, my God.
Hashtag.
Oh, I really don't want this to go live because I'm going to take a lot of heat for it. I just think that it's ridiculous that, you know, there's a group of people just kind of deciding shit at whim, and Sinister is like in charge of it and kind of coming up with the great plan. And it makes me angry.
He's very sassy about it, though. And it's
yeah,
fun.
He's very fun. Oh, I like
so
him.
That makes it okay. The sass makes it okay.
I loved Empath in this. I love the positioning of him as like a true monster who, and yeah. sort of rewriting how he became who he is. I thought was a cool text bit in the middle. Wild Child is very cool in this. Psylocke as the reluctant person. Havoc's weird though, because Havoc's continuity is that he had his brain rewritten during a Marvel event to be a villain, and he was one of the few people who didn't come out of it. He still has those villain tendencies. And the fact that they've sort of had to honor that continuity is always weird, because that was one of those events that like people never really dug into.
Right. Well, it's also, it feels like one of those things where they're already rebooting people into their best bodies possible. That seems like that would be an easy thing to fix with Havoc, but I guess yeah. not. Wasn't yeah. that also, that was one of those events that I read like 25% of. Was that caused by Apocalypse? Because that seems to be kind of brushed over this issue a little bit, if so.
Yeah, I don't remember, because I think it was a non-X-Men Marvel event. I don't think it was. I think it was a line-wide
It was a
event.
Rick Remender thing, right?
Yeah.
It was where everybody like got twisted.
I think it was spinning out of Uncanny Avengers, I want to say.
All right, well,
I
anyway...
also like. Oh, I was also, I really like the villain reveal at the end of this. I think this is going to be an interesting series. I'm excited for more.
Moving on to IDW, you're a weird dude, Pete. Dying is Easy, number 4, written by Joe Hill and art by Martin Simmons. This is a shit talk Holmes mystery. The shit talking detective. This is the fourth issue here. I got to be honest, this is the first one that I've jumped into. I haven't really been keeping up with this, but I like this. I thought this was a good mystery, and it was twisty and well set up. And Joe Hill, as usual, good writer.
Yeah, I like this a lot. I mean, the premise of a stand-up comedian detective I thought was fun. And the crayon drawing in the, sort of the beginning of the book of things my dad likes, I was like, fuck, that's basically what I like too.
Wow.
So I was really on board with that. Yeah, really fun. I'm curious to see if this is the first issue I've read, but I kept up with it and thought it was great.
Pete?
Do you agree with the order? It goes beer, his cats... Everyone laughing at him, David Letterman, and then the kids are last. Do you feel like you connect to that?
I don't think it's in order. I think it's just a grouping of things that he likes.
Right. Those are five things he liked. It's not a ranking.
It's not a David Letterman top 10 countdown.
It felt like the kid was taking a shot at his dad.
Number five, kids. number four, me, David Letterman.
Wow, that's anyway, kind of the best impression you've ever done.
Thank you very much. I've been working on it for far too long. Okay, Amethyst number 2 from DC Comics, story and art by Amy Reeder. This is, of course, picking up on the first issue. Amethyst has come back to the gem world and found out that everybody hates her people. They're all missing. Nobody likes her anymore. She's hooked up with a girl who has a giant worm friend, and they are trying to find her missing people, but nobody is being helpful.
Pete, this is your pick. What did you think of this?
My pick?
No, this is Pete's pick, I believe. Pete picked all the DC books, right?
Yeah. I really love the art. I think it was like a good storytelling, like setting this up of like this girl is kind of like forced into like she doesn't know what happened to her family. So she's trying to kind of piece things together. I felt like this was the storytelling really kept me involved in this. It's like I could have easily glazed over this and been like, meh. But I feel like the storytelling was so good. It really kept me involved. And then by the end of it, I was excited to see what's going to happen.
Alex, I cut you off. What were you going to say?
Oh, no, just I am surprised how much I like this book. I think a lot of it is down to Amy Reeder's characterizations and also her art are great throughout. This is just a fun all ages book, and there's a good twist at the end. I've never really been into the gem world stuff, but I think she is hitting it in exactly the right way with exactly the right tone. Very enjoyable.
Yeah, I agree. I love the her mom gave her a book on gemology, basically, which she was like, this is stupid, but then it served such a purpose in the story. Like, just bringing in a lot of smaller elements to make a great story. Really
yeah.
fun.
Yeah, really. I thought I was going to hate it, but it really won me over.
Cool.
Big gem
next
guy.
Next one to talk about from Archie Comics, Super Duck number one, story by Frank Thierry and Ian Flynn, and art by Ryan Jampol. This is fun.
There we go. Here's Solomon's favorite right here.
I don't know. I mean, no, this was maybe, yeah. I don't want to say this is necessarily my favorite issue of the week, but this is just exactly.
Just give it to him. Give it to Frank.
Give it to Frank.
Yeah. It's great. It's very dumb in exactly the right way. It's just him leading into bits. He developed this voice very well, not just over lots of comics, but specifically, I think it channels Harley Quinn, but via Superman. It works in a bunch, like it's not specifically the DuckTales comic books, but it's certainly hitting a lot of that stuff as well. And it's just this super duck character who's getting in a fight. It sets up the premise at the end is going to be very different from there going forward. But again, it's just all leading into bits. But the density of the bits throughout means that some don't work, but some really do hit. And that's great. I just had a fun time.
Yeah, it was fun. It was, you know, sometimes if you lean too hard on the comedy, the story stops to move forward. But I liked how, like, during the fights, there were, like, little bits and stuff that was going on. Yeah, I think this is really creative and done well. I mean, sometimes when you're it's supposed to be funny, it doesn't work in comics. But I really appreciated the way you kind of, like, right off the bat knew this character, knew what was going on, and kind of dove right in. I really enjoyed this more than I thought I was going to enjoy. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was fun. It was like teenage DuckTales.
Yeah,
like DuckTales that fucks around a little bit.
Yeah, it's super fun. Definitely, if you're looking for something that just got to like chill out and enjoy, that's a good one to check out. Let's move to another X-Men comic book, Giant Size X-Men Nightcrawler number one from Marvel Comics, written by Jonathan Hickman and art by none other than Alan Davis. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I was so excited about that. I love Alan Davis so much. I was only bummed that it was only some of the Excalibur characters, which is the thing that like I identify with the most. But it's Nightcrawler and a team of random X-Men heading back to the X-Mansion to investigate a mutant signature that they detected that has not come through the gate to Krakoa. The interesting thing about these giant-sized X-Men books is neither of them really focus on the subject that they're supposed to be about.
Yes,
but
which is fine, but a little odd.
Yes.
I find it a little like, oh, I wanted that.
Yeah, these are more like an annual kind of thing where it's like kind of in the world, but more of a one-shot kind of deal. I mean, Zalves, you had to love this. You had your favorite character in here kind of saving the day.
I did. I did love it.
Yeah, I bet you did. I like this. It was one of those things.
Do you know what? If you betted on it, you'd be correct because I did.
Yeah, it did.
Easiest money in town.
On it. Yeah, it was great.
I think Wesley Snipes said famously, always bet on Cypher.
But I also liked how it started off with, you know, classic, we're fighting, and then kind of, it was interesting to see Cypher kind of like save the day by talking to things. So, it was cool.
That's literally all he can do is talk to things.
As he does. It's great. What a hero.
It's rare to see Cypher save the day.
I mean, I did. And I'm curious to hear what you think, Justin, but even the Cypher of it all aside and the reveal of the other character aside, which I thought was great for the overall mysteries of what's going on in X-Men. I'm not going to spoil it here. But I thought this was a really good, very classic, very simple X-Men story. I liked where it ended up. I love Alan Davis's art so much. And it's funny, we've talked a lot about how Jonathan Hickman in the main X-Men title, it seems very cold and clinical. I didn't feel that at all here. Like, there's a warmth going on, and I don't know if it's Davis's art that brings about, but just everybody's character feels so much more charming and so much more friendly. I enjoy this issue a lot.
Well, I think Hickman loves to tell story. He wants to, like a lot of writers for big properties like the X-Men, you want to sort of write in every era of the X-Men or Spider-Man or whatever. And so this feels like a story from like the 80s, like a story that Alan Davis would have drawn, where it's like a random mix of X-Men. They're solving a mystery, and it gets into some weird continuity characters, and then you get a reveal that carries on into the continuity. I love that the X-Mansion has been totally abandoned and really gone wild with the plants. And this was a fun story. Not to get back on the complaining about the name of the issue, but the two giant-sized books have been Nightcrawler, this one, which is this one, and the White Queen and Jean Grey. Which there's so many interesting stories. Like the number one story, Nightcrawler's founding the Krakoan religion. Like I was like, oh, great. This issue is going to be about some cool aspect of that. Not at all. Jean Grey and White Queen, they have a crazy relationship because of Cyclops. It doesn't touch on that at all. And I'm just craving those big stories in this world.
I agree. I'm not quite sure about the nomenclature here. I feel like just calling it Giant Size X-Men number one, Giant Size X-Men number two would make a little more sense, maybe. Yeah. But as is, it's still a good story worth picking up. Moving on the Stump number two from Image Comics, written by Chuck Brown and art by Prenzi. This book is bonkers. We reviewed the first issue of it. Is about a semi-futuristic world. I think it might even take place now, yeah. Where all politicians are murderous wrestling superstars, and there's a whole conspiracy going on to get legislature passed. And it's just brutal, just the entire time, nonstop brutal. Pete, you're giving a little devil horns. What was your take on this?
You love this.
Yeah, I really love this issue. The first one, it was kind of like a what's going on here a little bit, but this really kind of like nailed things down, set things up for how things move forward. I really loved it. I thought the action and the art is amazing. Some great storytelling. I just think this is a kind of fun take on a fucked up world, and I liked it. I really did.
I like this world a lot. I think it's really smartly laid out. We get into Congress and I think the executive branch, mm-hmm. how the people in the executive branch used to be in Congress, so they also had to fight their way through to get their job. It's such a good premise that these issues, there's so much going on that I really want to slow down and like really lay out the world. The way we were talking about Once in Future has such a clean feel to it. Like I want more of that here, where it's just like, here's the premise. Let's just like move through it without getting into a ton of crazy side stories and just like deal with the idea of a government where everyone fights WWE style, except with death.
I tell you, and it also makes me really want to eat Skittles.
Wait, what?
Yes. There was one panel where someone had Skittles.
That wasn't one panel. Oh, there was a bunch of panels.
Yeah, that's great. Skittles are one of the worst candies, but we'll move on.
Fuck you. Okay,
so, wow. Alex, taste the rainbow.
Don't just say something crazy and then try to walk away from
it. I don't like it.
How dare you?
How could you not like their ad campaign where the Skittles, the candy you put in your mouth, was a rash on a person?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Were you like picking off of them? That's true.
Like a scab, like a fruity scab.
Yeah. Did you have the yogurt Skittles? Did you try those at all?
No, that sounds disgusting.
I don't try candy because I'm a grown-up.
Oh, okay. I tried that.
You never have had candy?
I've had candy, but I don't go out and be like, let me try some candy. I'm a Willy Wonka. I'm a whimsical Willy Wonka.
Are you serious? You're like,
I'll have a Chardonnay instead. No thanks.
You don't buy candy?
Yes, I try onions.
Adult candy is wides.
Oh, man.
All right, Basketful of Hoops number six from DC Comics, also written by Joe Hill and art by Leo Max. This is continuing a storyline where a girl comes to visit her boyfriend on his island where he is interning, I guess, as a police officer assistancing or something like that. Bunch of cons attack. There's been some twists and turns, and she has discovered an axe that seems to chop people's heads off, but keeps the heads adamant and is throwing them in a basket. It all, part of the pun, comes to a head this issue.
Milo,
this is great.
Rewrite
this
that.
Is pulpy.
I love this book.
This is pulpy in exactly the right way. So good.
I just love the main character so much. She's so good. She's like action hero and meets damsel in distress in a great way. Like she's lopping off heads, but she's like constantly in horrible situations. Like, it's just really smart.
She's such a badass, man. You know, cutting off your own thumbs to fucking take care of business so you can lop off more heads. This is great.
I can't wait to cut my thumbs off.
Oh, man, it's going to be so much fun.
I already did.
These fuckers,
don't let them get in the way.
Who's got no thumbs and loves cutting off thumbs?
that guy.
I can't tell.
I think
the art's phenomenal. This is really great storytelling. It's ramping up in this issue. This is getting real exciting. I'm loving it.
Yeah. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Let's move on to the Dynamite comic book, Killing Reds. Oh, sorry, I skipped by one. IDW Judge Dredd, False Witness, number one, story by Brandon Easton and art by Key Zama. I got to tell you, I wasn't quite sure what this book was going for at first, but once it started to come together, I liked the plot quite a bit. And what it is we're seeing a dude who is a regular seeming dude jumping his way and running an errand through Mega City 1. Judge Dredd is trying to take him down. But by the end, we get the sense that he has been sucked into a situation where he eventually is going to have to give evidence to Judge Dredd and work with him. And that's great. Like, I like that setup quite a bit.
I agree. Like, the once we got into the sort of the underlying premise that they're playing out here, I thought it was great. The last like five pages, I thought was cool. Judge Dredd is one of those things that I can't ever get past the movie adaptation. I hear Rob Schneider my head when I see Judge Dredd.
Oh, Carl Urban. Dredd is very good.
No, I know. I'm so sorry, but do you remember the other one? Because that's the one that I heard too many times.
I try not to remember it.
Wasn't he a monkey man or something? I don't know. Let's not get into it. I'm trying to forget
Stallone.
It.
I am the law.
Yeah, the Stallone wasn't good either, but then I always remember the Rob Schneider impression of Sylvester Stallone that he does in the trailer, and it just
Yeah, I agree. It was terrible. It was a little kind of crazy in the beginning, and then it's like also there were like Judge Dredd characters that were like part Transformer, part Judge Dredd, which I was like, what's going on? But as this thing kind of got going, then I really got into it, and I thought it ended really well, so it got me excited for more from the series.
All right, very cool. Let's move on to Killing Red Sonja, number one from Dynamite, written by Mark Russell and Bryce Ingman, illustrated by Craig Rousseau. The premise of this book, which is kind of fascinating, as you could probably figure out from the title, is that it's about somebody who is trying to kill Red Sonja. It's sort of a villain origin story in a way. And it's written by Mark Russell, who's one of the favorites of the show here. What'd you guys think about this one?
I really wanted it to get to Red Sonja, so I'm looking forward to when that comes. I like some of the fun. Mark Russell, I expected a little bit more like irreverence, didn't quite get that here. But maybe we're building up to it. There's a little bit here and there. I felt like they had to lay down a lot of exposition to get to where we're going, but I trust him as a writer, so I'm curious.
Yeah,
to see
I
where
really
it goes.
Love the art. I really love the talking boar. There was a lot of kind of fun stuff, but yeah, the story kind of trudged a little bit in places. But I was just wondering, as parents, when you guys leave for the morning, is that what you say to your kids every day? Like, listen, if I don't come back, you should avenge me?
Yeah, constantly. Even if I just leave the room, as I am wont to do often nowadays, I just say, hey, avenge me, if anything happens.
Don't you want to be avenged, Pete?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the main reason
I know,
I have kids.
It's just a lot to put on your. That's a lot to put on your child, you know. Because I would really mean that.
Craig Rousseau is great. He did a book called Perhaponauts, which is awesome.
Yes, I love that
and
book.
I love his stuff in there. So that's very good for out. It's a very painted, sort of almost watercolor style that he does throughout the book. I agree with you about the irreverence. I like the last couple of pages. It started to warm up for me when it brought in more fantasy elements. So I'm curious to read a second issue, even though this didn't quite spark with me in the right way. Last one we're going to talk about from Image Comics 6, Criminals number 28 by Matt Fraction and Jip Sadarsky. What is your deal, Pete? This is a good book, and this was a very good issue of this very good book.
lot of explanation coming out finally with this book. A book that even by the author's, the creator's own admission is like, wait, what are we talking about anymore? Because it was right. one of those books where they were like, this is a fun premise, and then it got into just so much other stuff. Like, I feel like Matt Fraction in the last couple of years as a writer has really let himself get into stuff that he lets the writing lead him as opposed to coming at a story or a premise with a strong take. And that's really interesting, and I feel like this is one where they're really landing all of the things they set up. And it's cool.
I disagree.
You disagree. What do you on what grounds do you disagree? Because
I don't give a shit about some evil fucking guy who's like torturing people for sex so he can like travel in time. Fuck that dude, murder him, let's move on. Like, this is fucking bullshit.
That sounds very interesting, what you just said. That's an interesting idea.
I will say it is bonkers, though, to your point, they even talk about this in the back matter a little bit, that 28 issues in, they're like, and here's what's going on with the villain, which seems like the sort of thing you would want to introduce in the third or fourth issue, but they just eventually got around to it. But this gives so much explanation. The story is so good. It's so dark and so sad and twisted throughout. Yes. This issue in particular made me very excited to go back and read the entire run of Sex Criminals when it's eventually done, because it's the sort of thing that, I mean, I don't know if it'll quite hold together, but it may, and it'll certainly be a very interesting thing to read as a story once you know the end point that they eventually reached and how that links back to the point where they started.
If you guys want to talk about how artistic or whatever it is, but it's just a dude jizz in a machine. Like, what the fuck are we doing?
I mean, what are we doing?
Yeah. I'm doing that right now, just off camera.
What are podcasts?
What I like about this is it's very rare in a book to see them sort of create the villain at the same time you're giving the exposition for the series and also setting up the downfall of the villain. To do that all at once is wild.
Yeah. I think this is great, regardless of what Pete is saying. Definitely pick this up, particularly if you're a fan of the book. And that is it. If you want to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we don't currently do a live show every Tuesday at 7 p.m., but we are doing it to the internet.
Which is live, Alex. It's live.
Oh, it is live.
I would argue it's even more live because it's live streamed.
It's even more live.
So we're doing that on two platforms, on Crowdcast and YouTube. We're doing the live show Tuesday night at 7 p.m. You can join us. You can ask questions there. We're giving away a gift card that is $25 to Midtown Comics, at least a lot there.
$25.
So definitely check that out. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. If you want to subscribe, particularly on iTunes, leave us a comment. Those help us out quite a bit. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. And you know what? We'll see you at the digital comic book shop.
Ooh, I love how you landed on that, Alex. Man from the future.
Sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. And occasionally